You see, most gamblers, when they go to gamble, they go to win. When we go to gamble, we go to lose. Even when we win, it's just a matter of time before we give it all back.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast,
featuring Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
No way.
Join them on their journey as they grow from gambling writers to sports betting sharps.
I mean, it's the gambling business. Occasionally get punched in the face.
You're listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast. Now, Jeff Clark and Eston McLaren.
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
Going on, we're back. It's Jeff Clark. I got my Sportsbook Wire colleague Eston McLaren on the line with me. This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast, episode 6. We're recording Tuesday night, August 25th. Eston, what's going on, man?
Sweating some baseball, sweating some playoff hockey, just loving this all you can eat sports still, and can't get enough of it. Let's keep it going and let's keep catching some tickets.
What are you on today?
I am on the Blue Jays to beat the Boston Red Sox by at least 2 runs and the over, I believe, 11. And I'm on the Tampa Bay Lightning to hopefully pull out a win over the Boston Bruins.
Nice. What are are any of those games going right now?
Jays are looking good right now, and the over also trending toward that way in that baseball game. And then tie game between the Bruins and the Lightning after one period. Lightning also had a goal disallowed because of a reviewed offside. So really should be 2-1. I'm really hoping they can return to that pretty quickly here.
Do you think it's the Jays looking good more than the Boston Red Sox looking bad?
No, the Boston Red Sox are awful. The Jays, to their credit, have been playing better of late, but the Red Sox are just not a good team in any way at all.
I know. It's so awesome. You know, you see the hat. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, they had their fun. It's good we can bond over that.
Yeah, they had their fun that whole last decade.
Right. Yeah, they had a tough go there for a while, and then, you know, a bit too good of a go. So it's nice to see a bit of regression to the mean anyway.
So let me remind everyone before we get any further, all of our odds and lines are provided by BetMGM Sportsbook. They're operational in Colorado, West Virginia, Illinois, Nevada, and New Jersey. So all of our listeners out there, be sure to check out BetMGM Sportsbook. They got great promos and bonuses to get you involved or to get you going. The games that I'm sweating are just the two NBA Game 5s that are playing tonight in the Western Conference. I actually did a Hoops Hype Best Bet of the Day with a BetMGM exclusive parlay. I guess it's not that exclusive, but they had it on their top banner. I just took the Jazz money line and the Clippers money line at plus 130. Put a couple units on that. So that's a little bit of what I'm sweating right now. Do you have any gambling rants to go on or anything noteworthy to talk about from last week?
No real rants. It was a pretty even keel week. I cashed a Dustin Johnson ticket at the Northern Trust, discussed right here on this show, 20-1. It was nice to get back on track. It's a little bit of a dry spell in golf. My golf picks on sportsbookwire.com. But yeah, it's nice to get back on track, and hopefully we can keep going this week. We'll get into that a little bit later and go into the window. But no rants. It was an even keel week, plus a bit of a bright spot with the golf win.
Nice. Well, I got some gross gambling wins that I can talk to you about since we've last recorded. You want to hear them?
Absolutely. Let's hear them.
All right. So I was down 15 units heading into last weekend. It was a rough go for your boy. Mm-hmm. But then I mounted a hell of a rally. I hit a 3-team parlay on Saturday with the Game 3 lines for the Heat, Oklahoma City Thunder, and the Lakers. Oklahoma City Houston ending was nuts. PJ Tucker threw the ball out of bounds to give Oklahoma City some more life. They extended the game and ended up winning, pushing that series to 2-1. We'll talk about that again a little bit later. I also, the next morning, Sunday morning, I hit a parlay with the Philadelphia 76ers at plus 7.5 over 215 in Game 4. Did you see this? Did you follow this at all?
No, I was off of basketball this weekend.
It was wonderful.
The Raptors, Raptors took care of the Brooklyn Nets, and it was just, you know, got to sit back a little bit and wait for the Boston Celtics next round here.
I know. I was, we'll talk about that in a second, but I was one game late on my best bet with Brooklyn. I hit them in game two. I knew they were going to give Toronto at least a tough game one of those outings. They played their ass off, but just didn't have nearly the talent. So anyways, Philly plus 7.5 over 215, game four. The 76ers had 8 points in the last 22 seconds to backdoor the cover and to push the over. Embiid flat-footed a meaningless 26-footer as time expired to cash both bets for me, plus 250. Holy smokes. Bet number three that I hit, I think it was the next game in the slate, whatever. It was the late game in the Sunday slate of the NBA. Game four, Nuggets, plus four against the Jazz. Jamal Murray also hits a pointless three to give Denver and me a cover. They were down five at the time, ended up losing by two. I had plus four. I took a 15-unit loss down to 4 units. I feel like I was plus $1 million. I couldn't have been any happier. Well, I guess I could have been happier, but I was stoked. And it inspired me to get some more NBA positions that we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Sounds great. I'm looking forward to getting in on those wins. You can leave me out of the minus 15-unit mess you got yourself into, and hopefully you're back on track and the listeners can follow suit and everyone can eat this week.
Hopefully I am back on track. So unless you have any gambling stuff to get off your chest, you want to go over to Scoping Futures?
Let's get into some futures.
This is the Bet Slippin' Podcast, Scoping Futures.
Right, so we're continuing our NFL division primer. Last week we did the AFC West. This week we're doing the NFC South. NFC South is BetMGM's fourth most likely division to win the Super Bowl at plus 425. The NFC South saw some big changes this offseason. Tampa Bay brought in the GOAT. They're now Tampa Bay. Carolina moved on from former number one pick Cam Newton and Ron Rivera. And they brought in Teddy Bridgewater and Matt Rule from Baylor University. Also the architect of LSU's offense last year, Joe Brady, to be the offensive coordinator in Carolina. Atlanta didn't do much. They decided to run it back. Chill. And speaking of running back, we're starting with last year's division winners, the New Orleans Saints, who, of course, will be led by Drew Brees and Sean Payton entering their 15th season together. The Saints are projected to win 10.5 games. The over is even money or plus 100. The under is minus 120. For them to make the playoffs, it's minus 400. No, plus 310. Divisions minus 121 for the Saints. NFC's plus 550. Super Bowl's plus 1200. How do you feel about the Saints going and coming into this year?
I like them this year. I'm on the over 10.5. 13-3 last year. You know, so we got some wiggle room there. We've talked about that with a few other teams, and you know, you're going to give me two fewer wins than they had last year. I'm going to take that. Those wins were without Drew Brees for a large chunk of that season. We're going to get into Teddy Bridgewater in a bit, how much you like him. I don't really like Teddy Bridgewater as a quarterback, but that's a testament to how good that rest of the team was, that with Drew Brees gone, future Hall of Fame quarterback, one of the best of all time, you know, you couldn't really tell week to week that Teddy Bridgewater fit in there seamlessly, and even he gave that team a chance to win every game.
I don't know if you have this information available or have if you've indexed any of these, but do you have an idea in your mind where Drew Brees would rank in your top quarterbacks heading into his, I don't know, millionth year? I don't know what year he's in. I gotta look it up.
Yeah, so I always find these sort of all-time Mount Rushmores kind of a fool's errand. You know, I haven't watched some of these guys that people always put on their Mount Rushmores. I haven't seen a whole lot of Steve Young, Joe Montana, Joe Namath in my life.
I don't know. I didn't mean to confuse. I meant just your big board heading into this year.
Right. Oh, this year. Sorry. Yeah. Of the quarterbacks still playing, he's career-wise, it's a little bit different. You know, him, Tom Brady probably 1-2 right now in the reverse order. Tom Brady, Drew Brees, greatest careers of the quarterbacks playing. If I'm taking a quarterback for just the year, this year, you know, he's probably just outside that top five, certainly in the top 10. But the team around it, Michael Thomas, the great year he had. You've seen my tweets. I'm not the biggest Michael Thomas fan. I don't think he's the greatest receiver in the NFL. We're going to get into who the real one is here in a little bit, talking about the NFC South. Plenty of options to choose from. It's not Michael Thomas. Alvin Kamara is a great running back, great for that system at the very least. And, you know, that defense has been a lot better than it's really getting credit for these last couple of years. They've, you know, really made some good moves these last couple of years, drafted some good talent, it's coming up and coming and going to keep that unit competitive for a long time. I like the Saints, and I like over 10.5. I don't know if they get to 13 next year, but you're going to give me 11 or 12. I think that's fine. And I certainly think they're still the top of this division. I don't see Tampa Bay overpassing them, surpassing them, you know, in year one after a couple of flashy moves. Saints, they kept the core together, and that's going to be huge in this year of shortened off seasons, teams getting less work with each other.
I am on the edge of my seat about who you're going to say is the best wide receiver in the NFL, and you're saying it's in this division. The guy just won Offensive Player of the Year. He got the same numbers with Drew Brees as he did Teddy Bridgewater. I love Teddy Bridgewater. I'm the vice president of the Teddy Bridgewater fan club. But I don't know. I think he's so solidified the number one wide receiver position that it is just a crazy take, but there are some just awesome names that are in the NFC South that we're going to talk about here in a minute. I tend to lean to the under 10.5 wins at minus 120. And to kind of go back to the original question I had for you, I actually have Drew Brees as my third best quarterback coming into this year. The main issue is the age, and it is an issue. He has a bit of a noodle arm now. He's 93 rated on Madden, which is the fourth highest Madden rating, second in completion percentage above over expectation, third in QBR, the number one Football Outsiders number one quarterback. So, I mean, they're awesome, and you hit on it. Like, their defensive depth is insane, and it's completely understated. Completely understated. DeMario Davis was one of the best linebackers, if not the best linebacker, according to PFF last year. Malcolm Jenkins, adding him to the safety tandem back there with Marcus Williams, is going to be great. Janoris Jenkins hated the Giants, hated being there, and when he was fully engaged, was an amazing defensive back. I don't know how far removed from his prime he is, but if he's got any bit of prime left, they could expect a lot of good stuff out of Janoris Jenkins. And, I mean, I'm just going to piggyback off of everything you would say about the offense. They're amazing.
Yeah, I'm not going to fault Janoris Jenkins too much for hating the New York Giants. And, you know, I'm going to side with them on that one, actually. But looking at this defense, this team went, you know, everyone knows how good the New Orleans Saints have been at home in Drew Brees and Sean Payton's tenure, and, you know, how revolutionized that fan base has become and how it's one of the most difficult places to play in the NFL. Well, they were 6-2 at home last year, 7-1 on the road. That to me is a testament to the defense, is that road record and how good that defense was. And, you know, you look at this year where every game, if not a road game, is at least a neutral site game for the most part, until later in the season perhaps. But no, plus 117 point differential last year, huge. 5-1 in the division, 7-0 in one score games. I know you like to talk about that every week. Going to steal your thunder on that one a little bit. Only three of those were with Brees. So Teddy Bridgewater went 4-0 in one score games. Teddy Bridgewater isn't the kind of quarterback who gets that record done. That's the rest of the team who did that for him, and they won those close games despite Teddy Bridgewater. Drew Brees can play the whole year.
You're being real mean right now.
This team's right back to where they were last year and the last several years.
Well, you hit it. Ready or not. My bad. You hit it with regression metrics. I got 7-1 in one score games. I think you said 7-0, but I don't know whether. They did awesome in one score games, regardless of the specific record. They were plus 15-0 and are plus 15 in turnover differential. I don't see that changing much, right? I mean, they're just a solid team up and down. Again, I lean to the under. It's not something that I'm going to bet, but I look at this team as a better regular season team than futures. That's why it's just a lean to the under. You know, they have so much depth, so much talent. But again, Drew Brees has a noodle arm. He doesn't push the ball downfield as much anymore. And I just think that they're so talented, smart, and well coached. They're gonna get wins against bad teams. I will bet them against good rush defenses. Some spots that I like them are I like their opponents. Tampa Bay has the best rush defense according to DVOA in the league. They play in week one, which is obviously too soon for Tom Brady to gel with Bruce Arians, so I don't really like them there. But they play at Tampa Bay in week 9. They play at Philadelphia in week 14, which could end up being a home field advantage because it's them playing outdoors in Philly in December. That matters. And I think that Atlanta's going to split a game with them because they play each other 2 times in 3 weeks, and it's insanely difficult to beat a team twice in 3 weeks. So,
right, and Atlanta, a bad Atlanta team last year, gave them one of their 3 losses as well. So, yeah, those teams, more often than not, split their season series. Most of the teams in this division do. So, yeah, I'm going to agree with you there. I'm going to get into my Falcons take here in a little bit. But, you know, at BetMGM, the New Orleans Saints to start 4-0 at plus 300. As you mentioned, open at home against the Bucs, at the Las Vegas Raiders, at home to the Packers, and then at the Detroit Lions. I like that for a triple up on your investment. And yeah, I like the Saints team. And I agree with you. I'm probably not going to bet this, but my advice would be to take that over for sure.
One other note
it is high.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. Would you have?
No. It's just a high number. I don't really love playing those personally as a general rule, but you know, I think with the room for error there, it's a totally fine bet if you want to make it and if you want to watch 16 New Orleans Saints games this year.
I mean, it's minus 120, so not a lot of vig there. That's nice. And they went 13-3 for 2 consecutive years. So, like you said, the 2.5 win cushion is nice. Just one note that I do find interesting, and that's the lack of or the diminishing of Kamara's potency in the passing game. They play the 19th toughest schedule, so it's easy, you know, below average, I guess, in difficulty. But they play the 6th toughest schedule in pass defenses and the toughest schedule in running back pass defenses faced. So look out, Alvin Kamara, and his yards per reception has declined in each of his 3 years. It was 10.2 in his rookie year, and now it was 6.6 last year. So I also don't think they're going to be as good in the run game, you know. All I hear from sharps and from football people over the past 5 years is how running backs fall off a cliff after they turn 30. Apparently, that doesn't apply to Latavius Murray. I don't know how that works. I don't get it. Football community. No. It feels like Latavius Murray might not be that good this year, based on everything they've said. Right?
He's kind of fallen, like, he's started down that cliff a couple times, but he just always seems to crawl back up at the last second and then just have a couple more good years. So, yeah, I like Latavius Murray as the number two there. I don't love him, let's say, as a backup. I think he complements Alvin Kamara really well. When Alvin Kamara got hurt, it wasn't the best. They went out this year, a move they made that I really like that, you know, obviously goes under the radar. They added Ty Montgomery. That pass catching used to be a wide receiver running back. I think he is a poor man's Alvin Kamara, and he would help a lot as then the number two to Latavius Murray if Kamara has to miss time again this year.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what Sean Payton cooks up with if he gets a backfield with Alvin Kamara, Taysom Hill, and Ty Montgomery. What are they going to do out of there?
That's the end of the Saints talk. We're going to bring up Taysom Hill. I thought we were going to make it through. Yeah, I just would just rather saying, head into the season pretending he's no longer there.
So, okay, how can you bring up Ty Montgomery, but I can't bring up Taysom Hill? I mean, they're both slash players. I'm just saying it'd be interesting. But you're right. We've exhausted the New Orleans Saints. You're just a lean, or do you? Could you? I don't want to spoil it. Could this possibly come with you to the window?
Yeah, there a few of these other bets with the Saints, the couple I discussed, and one other actually I'm going to say for going to the window. It's a lean to the over 10.5. That's the advice. We'll have to wait and see if I want to play that one myself, but I do have a good New Orleans Saints bet, a nice future at a big-time reward.
All right, Tom, I've been drilling this into my head, Tampa Bay, because it's so hard to say originally, but now that I've said it a million times, now I can't unsay it. Tampa Bay Buccaneers come in projected at, hold on, let me pull up my sheet here. They're projected at 10 wins, over plus 105. The under is minus 125. It's the second year of the Bruce Arians experience. He went 7-9 last year, despite the Jameis stuff, which we'll get into here in a second. And that's obviously the biggest story of the 2019 Buccaneers. We know what their problem was last season. It was Jameis Winston turnovers. In comes Tom Brady, who is the GOAT. I feel like they're getting a game manager at this point. But if they get a game manager and everything stays exactly like it is, this team could definitely contend for the division. What's your Buccaneers feelings coming into 2020?
Right there, you said it with the game manager. If Tom Brady can be that and not the Tom Brady everyone knows and remembers or thinks they know and remember, if he can just, pass a little bit and not give it away, that's really going to let that defense shine. You touched on it earlier. They were handcuffed so many times by those Jameis turnovers that just gave them awful field position. At 5.1 yards per play allowed last year, that ranks sixth in the NFL, but they gave up 449 points, which ranked 29th in the NFL. Minus 13 turnover differential. Like, obviously, all that goes together. And it's so easy to just say, oh, Jameis is the problem. He's not here anymore, so we're going to be good. But that's so true. That is so true. It is just that one guy who was the problem. And yes, I play fantasy football. I love fantasy football. Jameis Winston made that Tampa Bay Buccaneers team fun. It made so many fantasy assets on that team. But if you're betting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and if you're a fan, it just takes away any hope of winning anything unless you bet the over every single week.
I love Jameis Winston. He was on one of the greatest college football teams ever. That Florida State title team was insane. If you go back and look at it, I think there was like 25 kids drafted. Like, it was nuts. It was nuts. And they had, like, the highest different point differential past 10 years. But we're not here to talk about college football. All right, so back to, well, in this case, it'd be progression and metrics. Real quick on that. You ever hear someone say, like, positive regression? You hear that a lot, right? Positive regression. Oh, yeah. Positive regression. Me and you have joked about it and how just dumb that is, because there is a word for positive regression. Progression, that is the word. However, mm-hmm. I've read so many people smarter than me, professional NFL writers, who've said it in podcasts and referred to it in writing as positive regression. It's absurd. So maybe that's the thing. But anyways, progression metrics. They were 3-6 in one score games and minus 13 in turnover differential. And as you said, and as you know, as we've talked about it, that matters a lot with Jameis Winston. And it was very evident in how those games played out. Several of those games ended in an interception, including to the division rival Atlanta Falcons. My biggest bet of the regular season was that final game against the Atlanta Falcons. I called the pick six as it was happening. I saw what he saw in the broadcast angle and knew he was throwing it to, I forget who picked it off. But I mean, you have that. You have the New York Giants game week three, the Panthers game where they outgained them 407 yards to 268, but they had seven turnovers, seven in week six. Week 8, they blew a game to the Titans. Week 9, next week, they blew an overtime game to the Seahawks. I mean, it's just, it's the same thing over and over again. The Texans in week 16. I bet the Texans, that game, I got super lucky to come out with that one. They had 5 turnovers. Again, just Jameis Winston shooting themselves in the foot. But enough about him. Tom Brady, I have him as my 11th best quarterback entering 2020. Part of it is because I believe so much in Madden, and they have him as the 5th rated quarterback, which is absurd to me, kind of. But hey, Madden kicks ass, whatever. He was 17th in QBR, 17th in DVOA, 12th ranked on PFF. So I kind of just cut it in the middle, some of that stuff, and put him at 11, whatever. And, you know, he, like Drew Brees, has a bit of a noodle arm. You know, he can't get it deep anymore. Maybe you cannot make the argument that it was based on the people he was thrown to in New England, but
it's exactly that. That's, other than that Randy Moss year, and no, other than the Randy Moss year, this is the best receiving cast he's ever had. You know, Gronk's there, sure, so what? We don't know how good he's going to be. But Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, you know, the other pieces there, Scott Miller, OJ Howard, these guys are all ballers. They're better than anyone he's ever had in New England, other than Randy Moss and Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. So I don't know how bad his arm truly is, or if it's just the fact that he's been throwing to number one receiver Julian Edelman and Gunnar Olszewski and the other clowns who've been there these last 3 years.
AB. He threw to AB for 1 week.
Yeah.
That looked good.
Yeah, against the Miami Dolphins. So.
No, I hear you, but...
all came together that week.
So this is why, like, all right, so that kind of made me think why I like Chris Godwin more than Mike Evans in this particular scenario. I like him anyways, but, like, he works better out of the slot, and Tom Brady works better with slot wide receivers. Either way, the thing that's been said about Tom Brady over his whole career is that you need to earn his trust as a wide receiver, right? And he might be more willing to do that with Bruce Arians and the vibe that he has, but, like, it might not be just – they might not be killing it out of the gates, you know, slicing teams up or hitting on the big plays or early. So – that's why I'm hesitant to take him in week 1 against the Saints, but I like him in week 9. I think the defense is going to come out on point. I love Todd Bowles. Love Todd Bowles. I'm sorry, you're about to say something. Take it over.
Love Todd Bowles as a defensive coordinator. Yeah. Certainly not so much as a head coach.
Hold on. Yeah, I just want to push back on that for a second, right? Because you want to give Tom Brady, you want to let him off the hook for having crappy weapons. You try coaching the New York Jets. What did you expect?
Yeah, fair.
But he's not. He's a much better coordinator. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, maybe he gets another chance in a couple years. He deserves another chance here in a couple years. You can't count anything associated with the New York Jets as a negative toward anyone. Fair.
You take him over Dan Quinn.
No. I'm gonna push back on that one. Maybe the one guy I wouldn't.
I'm done cutting you off. Go ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned that week 1 game against the Saints. That is -200 to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers' first loss of the season. BetMGM ain't bugging there. That's an accurate line. We talked everything good about the Saints. We've talked about the risks associated with the Buccaneers this year. -200 to lose week 1 on the road in New Orleans, with or without fans. Yeah, that's going to be a very tough game for them. Tom Brady going up against, you know, the second best quarterback, other than Peyton Manning, peak Aaron Rodgers maybe, but longevity of his career is still active right now, Drew Brees.
He's all right.
Yeah. But that defense, you were touching on there quickly, that they could keep them in games early in the season while that offense gels and comes together. Their final few games of the year gave up more than 22 points just once in their last 6 games. Other than that 28-22 overtime loss to the Falcons you mentioned earlier, you know, that's good defense. They really can. They have playmakers there. Ndamukong Suh, Shaq Barrett. well, you know, we'll see what Tom has early on. And, you know, we talk about trying to avoid changes early in the year, teams who went through changes early in the year. If anyone can handle that, it's Tom Brady, who's been around and gone through, you know, sometimes recently, especially a lot of year over year change in New England with new guys coming in off the street to be his receiver in week three or whatever. So, yeah, I don't think they're going to be as bad early on as maybe some of these other teams we've discussed. But I don't know if they're going to be as good later on as people perhaps expect.
Sure. I kind of have the same hesitation. I only lean over the 10 wins. I'm always chasing values, so the plus 110 really excites me. But, you know, why I'm hesitant is they're a defensive team, and that's great. I like that, you know. Whatever. Defense wins championships. Fifth in DVOA, first in rush DVOA. However, this year they do play the fifth toughest schedule of offenses. Their division is insane. I'm much higher on the Carolina Panthers offense than maybe you are, or maybe you like their offense and just don't like the team. I don't know. We'll talk about that in a minute. You know, the Falcons should have a good offense. Saints should have a good offense, right? And also they play the best pass protection offenses in the NFL. So it might be a little tough for Barrett and JPP to get home on the quarterbacks. Also, you know, you got to keep in mind, like, they're not very deep there. So I'm only leaning to the over, but I'm probably not going to play it myself. Do you have any other Buccaneer notes, or do you want to move over to the Falcons?
No, that's good for me. Exactly 10 wins is the betting favorite. If you like those exact wins bets, I know you don't. Plus 260, you know, kind of matches that win total exactly. That's how they do these things. Yeah, I probably lean to the under as you, but I think that's an accurate line. I do like that minus 200 week one loss in New Orleans as almost a free money bet in my eyes.
Yeah, I actually, when you said that, I pulled up their menu, BetMGM's menu. Go check out their app if you haven't, by the way, especially all of our listeners in Colorado, Nevada, New Jersey, West Virginia, and Illinois. It's a sick app, but I pulled up. It says that the Saints are minus 200 on the money line against the Buccaneers. So whether you bet the Buccaneers' first loss or minus 200 really doesn't make any difference. It's the same line. So interesting. I don't know. I wouldn't lay 2-1 on that point on that one because, I do like the Buccaneers' offense or defense. But let's go over to the Atlanta Falcons. What do you say?
Here we go. Let's go.
So my thing about the 2019 Falcons, I bet the hell out of them after their bye week. Where do they go in their bye week? I think the Falcons are more of the team from past their bye week, where they won 6 of 8 games, than they were the 1-7 team before it. I think, and I said this as I was betting them, they were a good team with a bad record. That was my thought, right? Dan Quinn was thought to be a lame duck coach, but they granted him another year. He decided to take the bull by the horns at the defensive play calling in the beginning of the year. This is my favorite story also of any of these team previews that I've read. So Dan Quinn wanted to be the defensive play caller and effectively the defensive coordinator. So he took control. The Falcons were terrible on defense the first 8 weeks. Were terrible. This fool fired himself as the defensive coordinator, and they immediately became like a top 10 defense in the back half of the year. That's awesome. I love self-awareness. Good job, Dan Quinn. They all played their asses off for him. They played tough for him. They like Dan Quinn, right? I know Falcons fans don't like Dan Quinn as much as the team does. They wanted him to stay, and I like that they're running it back. I like that they're giving these guys another shot because Matt Ryan is still around his prime. Julio Jones is, you know, still a top 5 wide receiver in my book.
That is the number 1 wide receiver, Jeff.
I have hope in Denver. They're about to extend the series, and I'm about to lose money. Anyways.
Ooh.
And what was I saying? We're talking about the Atlanta Falcons. Oh, the defense has obviously glaring holes, but I like Todd Gurley. I think Todd Gurley, in a reduced role or in a good system, can still be a productive running back. Obviously, not someone you're going to break the bank for, but I don't know. What do you think about the Todd Gurley addition?
I've been on the fence on Todd Gurley. You know, that knee arthritis that everyone talks about, and, you know, limits how effective he can be, how long he can go for, really, whether he's going to miss time or not. Just, he can't be used that much, at least as much as he did. But you know what, Jeff? He's going to be a hell of a lot better than what they had last year. The 2019 Atlanta Falcons didn't have a single 100-yard rusher. 8 different games last year, their top rusher was held below 50 yards. You can't win football games like that. And I know people use gross rushing stats like that to say, like, yeah, obviously when you win games, you're putting up a lot of rushing stats. Yeah, but it helps the passing game if you have a threat in the backfield, at least. I don't care if you use them, and I'm all for these pass-happy offenses. Really works for the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to follow that for a couple of years. But yeah, Todd Gurley is going to be better than Devontae Freeman was last year. Devontae Freeman's gone. You know, they kept the secondary pieces there, Ito Smith, Quadri Olison. They really like Brian Hill as well. So yeah, I think that rushing attack is going to be a lot better. And that's really going to help out Matt Ryan, cut down on his mistakes again. And you have two wide receivers like Julio Jones, number one in the NFL, and Calvin Ridley. Look out. Look out. Big year coming up there. Expecting 1,000 yards. He says, I think he's going to do it. The number two to Julio Jones, that's going to be the best receiving tandem they've had since Roddy White was number one and Julio was number two. And Hayden Hurst, the reports are glowing about him. Matt Ryan talks him up almost every single day. Coaches love him. Hayden Hurst, you know, really positive about himself and where he's at and what he can do. And I think that offense, if Dirk Cutter doesn't hold them back as the offensive coordinator, I think the talent's there to be reminiscent of that Kyle Shanahan-led Super Bowl team.
I'm high on the Falcons as well. You were kind of hitting on it, or you're dancing around it unknowingly maybe, but there's no ands, ifs, or buts about this. The offensive line needs not to be terrible. That's it. I mean, they had a minus 22 sack margin last year. They were in rush DVOA. They were 22nd, the Atlanta Falcons. I mean, Matt Ryan just didn't have enough time in the pocket. And you know what's most disappointing about that is that you guys have talent on your offensive line, and you've invested in the offensive line. The 7th highest paid offensive line in the NFL. How many?
They took 2 offensive linemen in Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry last year, both first rounders. Both of them missed quite a bit of time last year. You just bring those 2 guys back and have them play most of the season. Well, there's the upgrade you're supposed to have last year, plus they have a little bit of experience.
Absolutely.
Alex Mack's still great in the middle.
Yeah. No, Alex Mack is still a top-end center. Their post-bye schedule is an absolute nightmare. They got a bye week in week 10, then they have New Orleans, Raiders, New Orleans again, Chargers, Bucks, Chiefs, Bucks. So they got to get out to a fast start, and it's tough because they're playing the team that I think is going to go to the Super Bowl, Seattle. And honestly, if the Falcons, it's a crazy predicament that I'm in the sense that I think the Seahawks are going to win the title or the Super Bowl. They're my favorite team going into the season, but I'm high on the Falcons, and I actually think the Falcons kind of need to pull this game out at home week 1 to just get some positive momentum going. So, and you know, the Dallas defense, who's their week 2 opponent, is pretty weak, and I like how that matches up for the Falcons. So they really need to get the wins piled up early, because the back end of their schedule is a nightmare. Even if they split with Tampa Bay and New Orleans, it's still a bit of a nightmare. So I do think I love the Falcons over 7.5 wins at even money. I like them to make the playoffs at plus 225 as well. You know, that's part of the reason why I'm down on or leaning towards an under with the Saints and only leaning towards the over with the Buccaneers, because I think this division's much better. And I think the Falcons are going to make a playoff run, if not a division run. I don't hate it at plus 900, but I'm not gonna take that. I'll take the playoffs.
Yeah, the improvements that Buccaneers team made, that's really kind of suppressed the odds for the Falcons and even the Saints to a degree. So I think if you're willing to fade the Buccaneers, there's immense value on the Falcons there as now the third favorite in that division. And yeah, exactly 8 wins, the betting favorite there, plus 280. That's over 7.5. I like the over on the Falcons. Defense, you know, maybe if Dan Quinn hands off, he was this highly touted defensive coordinator with the Seattle Seahawks. Well, they had a lot of defensive talent that few other teams have had since that time. He was a highly sought after head coach for that reason. The Falcons defense has been pretty bad since he's been there. Like we said, the time they went to the Super Bowl, it was almost entirely because of Kyle Shanahan as offensive coordinator. I think the talent's there on offense, and I think that defense can be better if Dan Quinn, you know, kind of takes more of a hands-off approach.
I agree. I think the defense has the potential to really improve year over year. I like the pick of A.J. Terrell. It might have been a bit of a reach. I love the second-round pick, Marlon Davidson. That guy is a tank. Had 12.5 sacks last year in college at Auburn. Add some depth, much-needed depth to your edge rushers. Even play some defensive end. Grady Jarrett's one of the best or he could even play defensive tackle. Grady Jarrett's one of the best defensive tackles in the league. You guys picked up Dexter Fowler. Dexter Fowler plays baseball. You don't spend a lot of money on the defense, but you do have talent in there.
Yeah, and Keanu Neal, one of the best safeties in the game when he's healthy. He's coming back this year. You know, it's been a while since we've seen a full healthy season from him. When that was, he was one of the best safeties in the league. One of the hardest hitters, certainly a ball hawk, a playmaker. So hopefully he can get back to that level in a healthy season. And, you know, Deion Jones is a great linebacker as well. They kind of have one star at each stage of the defense. Hopefully that line's a little better improved this year with Dante Fowler replacing Vic Beasley and the draft pick of Marlon Davidson. So he'll join Grady Jarrett in the middle. Don't try to sneak it on these Atlanta Falcons in 2020.
All right. Well, I have a whole bunch of Carolina Panthers notes, so we better hurry up and get over there. We'll talk about the Falcons here and go into the window. But Carolina Panthers, they enter the season projected to win 5.5 games. I believe that's what it is. Team win total is 5.5. Over is 121. Under is even money. To make the playoffs, they're plus 400 for the yes, minus 556 for the no. Division plus 2,000. NFC plus 5,000. Super Bowl plus 10,000. They're going over. Spoiler. I'm going to start with the ending now. They're going over. I'm just going to read this from the Warren Sharp preview. Teddy Bridgewater has the most insane ATS mark for a quarterback in history. He led his team to a 31-9 ATS record in games where he attempted at least one pass. His teams are 25-15 straight up during that span since 2014. He was 6-0 straight up and against the spread last year when he filled in for Drew Brees. He's a perfect 4-0 in seasons, or his team is a perfect 4-0 on the over for their team win total in seasons that he starts. I know it sounds crazy because of all the turnover and, you know, Matt Rule, who knows, Joe Brady, who knows, but they have a lot of talent in this offense, and Teddy Bridgewater is the perfect game manager, and I think he's going to get the most out of DJ Moore. Christian McCaffrey is already the best running back in the game. I have a feeling you're going to go right at their defense. That's just a low blow. Let me cut you off there. It's a low blow. But what do you think, Eston?
Sorry, you're on the over. What can you remind me again if it was 0.5 or 5.5? I have 5.5, but maybe you're maybe that odds adjusted in the time between we did our prep.
I got over a half win at a minus 1500. I got the alternate line on that one.
These Carolina Panthers are garbage. I don't care about the new coach. Matt Rhule could have been there for the last 10 years. What he has to work with is trash. This Panthers team is awful. I don't care about Teddy Bridgewater's past numbers. I'm sorry. Those were with a good Minnesota Vikings team and a really good New Orleans Saints team. Carolina Panthers suck. Yes, they have Christian McCaffrey, but when your number one, your only returning asset is a running back fresh off of a historical season with career highs across the board, league highs across the board, there's going to be regression, and not progression, not positive regression, straight up regression, Jeff, out of their best player and the only player they can count on. Teddy Bridgewater, he's not going to do what he did with Michael Thomas. Yes, Michael Thomas isn't the number one receiver in the league. He's better than DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson, Curtis Samuel. Come on. This Panthers team, the only upgrade they have over the New Orleans Saints is 2019 Christian McCaffrey over 2019 Alvin Kamara. And we don't know which one's going to be all that much better in 2020. It'll probably be McCaffrey, sure.
Oh, come
but
on.
He won't be as good as he was last year.
All right.
I'd bet on that. I'd bet.
You're going to bet under on McCaffrey.
All of his last year's stats. I don't know what his lines are this year. Not sure if I'm betting under on those, but I'm certainly betting on less than what he had last year.
All right. I hate everything you just said.
I didn't even go to the defense. You asked me not to go to the defense?
Yeah,
didn't go there.
What's wrong with the defense?
Didn't talk about how, you know.
No Luke Kuechly? Or no Luke Kuechly? Is that a problem? No Gerald McCoy? No Dontari Poe? These aren't issues, are they?
Yeah, I'm sure Kuechly is really going to help them scout and practices and stuff. No, this team's bad. It's straight up, top to bottom, bad. You want to talk about Christian McCaffrey? Sure, he's good. He gets hurt. Welcome Mike Davis as your number two running back. Awesome. Let's go ahead and give the ball to Christian McCaffrey 400 times again. Let's see if he can stand that 16 games for the second year in a row.
I mean, hey, he's under 30 years old, so why not? And that's not fair. That's not fair. You can do that with everyone, right? I mean, if Matt Ryan gets injured, Falcons are done. I mean, yeah, if Christian McCaffrey goes down.
Quarterback's a different ballgame. We did it with the New Orleans Saints and talked about how good Latavius Murray is as a backup.
Well, yeah, but he's over 30. And he's never been half the player as Christian McCaffrey.
No, but he's been 10 times the player of Mike Davis.
That's true. I didn't even see the Mike Davis on the team, honestly. I thought they drafted running backs or something. Hold on.
No.
Technically, on Warren Sharp's thing, they got Cameron Artis Payne, I think. Or is it Curtis Artis Payne? I'm thinking of Cameron Payne, who's the backup point guard for the Phoenix Suns. I'm going to get pinged by our editor. He's going to be mad about this one.
I'd rather him as the backup to Christian McCaffrey.
Okay, so
Mike Davis, get out of here.
I'm getting the vibe that you like the under here.
Eli Apple was their biggest addition. Eli Apple has been a negative on every team he's been. The Las Vegas Raiders dodged a bullet when that free agent deal fell apart.
Listen, I'm not going to even try to make a pro Eli Apple argument. I'm liking a whole bunch of overs this year. I'll tell you that. I'm liking some overs in this game because I believe in their offense. And I believe that Joe Brady and Matt Rhule can at least be gimmicky to throw some people off the first few weeks. And they're going to develop and could develop over the course of the season. Against the teams in their division, there's going to be a lot of points scored. And whether they have to throw themselves back into it or just the increased passing volume because they're down so many points, I think the over is going to be a play in a lot of Carolina Panthers games. I'm getting the vibe that you're feeling the under, but let's go over to BetMGM Buggin' here.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. MGM Buggin'.
We got two notes here, or two things to cover. One is our Stanley Cup playoffs first round pick 'em. Can you break that down? Who won between me or you?
Yeah, so for those who have been listening the last couple of weeks, Jeff and I, at the start of the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, we went round by round, made our draft picks for each series winner, and I won. My biggest one was the Vancouver Canucks, my biggest underdog, at plus 165. Jeff, to your credit, you got the New York Islanders over the Washington Capitals, nailed that one, plus 150, but when you add up all the wins and losses, all the $100 losses, I went 6-2 straight up in the series. That was the biggest difference. You finished minus 427. I was plus 185, 56.
Barely.
Counting $100 bets on every series. Hey, you know, you tried that underdog approach. I applaud you for it. It's what got me through the qualification round and the Eastern and Western Conference round robin. But I like the favorites last round, and it worked out. Different story so far in this second round, but we'll talk about that in future episodes.
Yeah, you really exploited my lack of hockey knowledge and got me. I'm going to Venmo you after this, though. and I'll real quick, like I said earlier in the podcast, I took more NBA first round series action. I pre-flopper before the start of the OKC Houston series, I put like 10 units or 11 units on OKC at plus 140. I bought them and before game four at plus 450. So I just was like, you know what? If I'm going to miss, I'm going to miss big. I'm getting more money on them. So I put an extra unit at plus 450. They tie the series up 2-2. And right now it's again plus 140 currently on BetMGM Sportsbook. So I've had a few of my friends and I've watched people on TV criticize the Oklahoma City Thunder or say that they've been lucky to tie the series up. You know what I think is lucky? Hold on, let me read you some stats here that are just absolutely absurd. So, here are the top 5 3-point shooters in the series for the Houston Rockets. Number one, Jeff Green at 48%. Number two, PJ Tucker at 44%. Number three, Ben McLemore at 41%. Number four, Robert Covington at 40%. Those four dudes are over 40%. That is amazing. Daniel House is fifth at 39%. And then sixth is James Harden at 33%. Are those numbers sustainable? Like Oklahoma City, they're lucky to be in the series, right? Are those numbers sustainable?
Yeah, absolutely not.
Right? You think, and this isn't small volume. This isn't small sample size, which I guess part of the argument of maybe they are could be sustainable. Jeff Green has shot in 27 threes in four games. PJ Tucker, 25. Ben McLemore, 17. Covington, 20. They're shooting a 40% clip on this. That's not sustainable. And you saw that. I don't know how much you watch a game four, right? They were at one point 53% from 3-point line. Right, and then to end the game, they went 5 of 25, and you know you hear the commentators like, "Oh man, this is just a funk. It's just a funk." That's regression to the mean. That's what that is, right?
Right. We've had a lot of regression talk in here, and you know, for people listening who don't fully understand that term, how it's used in sports and sports betting in particular, you know, regression to the mean doesn't mean that. You know, just one game, you're going to go 0-for to counteract all that over success. It just means one game, all those guys are going to shoot their career averages rather than 10 points above them. And yeah, it's going to seem like they're going 0-for because they're not having that exaggerated success they had been. So yeah, especially when they're putting up that many shots, that 40% and stuff, you know, it can kick around for a little bit longer for guys who are taken 5 3-pointers a game, and you know, you can probably hit 2 out of 5 a few games in a row.
Yeah, especially with everyone in the defense is looking at James Harden.
Right. You're not going to hit 6 out of 15 or, you know, 8 out of 20 for that long a period of time. You're just not. No one is.
No, and I tweeted this out mid-game, but anyone who bet the Oklahoma City Thunder absolutely hates Jeff Green right now. It is terrible watching this guy bang threes.
Yeah, well, here's hoping that that negative regression sets in here in time for you, and you know, you don't get caught in this the wrong end of, well, I know I have before, I'm sure you have too. You get caught on the wrong side of these lucky streaks. You take the L only to watch that team get swept or lose in 5 games the very next round against the team you weren't betting, at least not nearly as hard in your case.
Yeah, I'm not crazy about Oklahoma City in the second round, but I'm going to take them at some more money, or take them at plus 140 here and heading into game 5. Sorry about that.
Yeah, are you safe?
I'm all right, but someone else in Long Beach might not be very safe. Sorry about that,
someone
guys.
Someone had a bad day.
Anyways, that does it for BetMGM Bug. And let's go to the window and get our bets in before we get out of here. What do you say?
Let's do it.
The Bet Slippin' Podcast. Going to the window.
All right, so going to the window is pretty self-explanatory, but just in case it's not. This is essentially where we go, where we wrap up the show with our best bets of the things that we talked about. So do you have one that you want to get into first?
Yes, we mentioned off the top, hit Dustin Johnson at the Northern Trust last week, plus 2,000.
Yeah.
That's my sweet range again this week. You know, this is the top 70 of the FedEx Cup standings, moved on to the second last event of the season. All the top guys are here, except for Webb Simpson, who withdrew today, Tuesday. So, you know, there isn't going to be a whole lot of value. There's no sense taking super big long shots. You know, that's going to work sometimes for you in something like the Sanderson Farms Championship, whatever. It's not going to fly here. You go bet on guys who win. Colin Morikawa, winner of the PGA Championship, he's plus 2,000. Earlier this week, at least yesterday, that was 9th by the odds. This guy won a major 2 weeks ago. He missed the cut last week, sure. Doesn't matter. I don't really care. 3 weeks ago, sorry, PGA Championship. Missed the cut at Northern Trust. Awful, awful everything, really, from him. We're not going to see that 2 weeks in a row from Colin Morikawa. Won the Workday Charity Open before the PGA Championship. 5th in the FedEx Cup standings. He's 2nd on tour this season in strokes gained approach. That's going to help here. Set up some birdie putts. Set up some scores. We're not going to see anything as low as Dustin Johnson's minus 30 last week. Colin Morikawa was a guy who can stick it tight every time. Plus 2,000 is a value for him, and that's the highest odds we've seen on him, you know, basically since the PGA Tour's restart in June.
All right. Well, hey, some of BetMGM bugging bled into going to the window for me. So just to, you know, restate what I already did, I'm taking OKC plus 140 after game 4 to beat the Houston Rockets. Already got a bunch of action on it, but I wasn't able to – we weren't recording before the start of the series, so I'm happy I'm able to get the same price with essentially a best of 3 here on out. What else do you have in your slip?
You know, ever since we started the show, we're in episode 6. You and I have both been talking about our futures bets on the Toronto Raptors, how much we like them to – you know, you have them to win the Eastern Conference, I have them to win the Eastern Conference and the NBA Championship. But this series against the Boston Celtics, round 2 – as of today, Tuesday, the Raps minus 154 to win, Boston Celtics plus 130. I hedged today with a bet on the Boston Celtics to win this series. You can't not. It's right there. Boston beat the Raptors by 6 points, by 16 points in the regular season, and then by 22 points August 7th in the bubble. Both those teams were basically at full capacity. Yeah, they gave a little bit more playing time to some backups and some reserves. And yeah, the Raptors probably weren't, you know, showing their proper rotations and plays. But 22-point victory 2 weeks ago, getting plus 130 to win the series. Boston Celtics as at least a hedge to a Raptors futures bet.
All right. Well, I mean, Boston, I think, are playing the second best basketball right now, if not the best, along with the Toronto Raptors. Miami Heat looked great in the first round as well. So I don't hate it, but I got a pretty hefty futures ticket on the Raptors to win the East. And I am not hedging. I'm not. I'm rolling it. Let's do it, baby. Let's roll. All right. I'm going with our neighbors of the North, Toronto, to make it back to the finals. The other one on my bet slip, and I already hinted at this, but I'm going over Falcons plus over 7.5 wins, even money, and I'm going to go yes for the Falcons and make the playoffs at plus 225. I think this is a bounce back year for Matt Ryan and Dan Quinn. They're everyone's like favorite, I don't know, sleeper team or the team that they expect to right the ship and be better year over year, and they've kind of disappointed over the past few years, and now I feel like their stock is the lowest. So I'm going to pick it up. And they're the one team that, I mean, they have an MVP. They have an all-time wide receiver. They should have won a Super Bowl. They've been to a Super Bowl recently with the same core, and no one's talking about them. It's a great position for them to be in. So going over Falcons, 7.5 wins, and yes, to make the playoffs. Sorry.
And the last episode, I gave Dan Quinn a hard time. He deserved it. I'm not going to back down on that. Everything I said to Dan Quinn, fully deserved. But they have a comeback player of the year award. They should have a comeback coach of the year award. I'm going to bet on Dan Quinn for that this year. And I'm going to agree with you on those Falcons bets.
Wait,
I think that's good.
What's his coach of the year? You're taking that?
Well, no, not the coach of the year, but a comeback coach.
Okay, you're saying. I gotcha. Yeah. I gotcha.
Hypothetical award, BetMGM. If you want to give me odds on that, yeah.
Well, I wonder what the line would be for an extension, a contract extension.
Ooh.
Is that what you're looking? I mean, that's what you're saying.
I don't know if I want to bet on that. No. One year of great play, and then I'll see you anyway. Thank you very much.
Okay. So. Well, if the Falcons go over their win total and make the playoffs, my bet's cash. They're keeping Dan Quinn around.
Yeah,
rough. And the last thing on my slip, I got my Teddy Bridgewater jersey on, over 5.5 wins. I'll eat the VIG, minus 121. Let's go. 18 units I'm putting on it. I'm just kidding. I'll put one unit on it. But I like the Panthers. Do you have anything else on your bet slip?
No, that's a good note to leave it on. Don't give me a chance to give any worse advice than that and leave you looking sour with that nugget at the end.
Yeah, that little parlay that I was sweating, my hoops hype best bet, I can rip that up and might kick my computer. I'm very disappointed in how that ended, but we'll maybe talk about that next week on Bet Slippin', where we're also going to continue our NFL division preview with the NFC East. We'll decipher the landscape of the NBA and Stanley Cup playoffs, and hopefully let you know about some more fun gambling wins or interesting stories. Do us a favor and subscribe, rate, and review Bet Slippin' on your podcast platform of choice. You got anything else for them?
Nope. iTunes, Spotify, whatever you got. Subscribe, like, review, like Jeff said. Let's keep this going. Let's have a good week. Everyone have a good week. Got some tickets.
Yeah, good game, everyone. Best of luck.
You've been listening to the Bet Slippin' Podcast with Jeff Clark and Esten McLaren from USA Today Sportsbook Wire.
Listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We'll